ॐ मंगनाथ निरंजन्य जनार्दना शिलाक्षाय शक्षो मिरिदाम्ये न तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः। श्री चैतन्य अनुभविष्कं तपितं येन भूतले स्वयं उपकृतमाय स्वापराधिकं नमः। ॐ विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रस्थाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्रीनामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे देवेश सुंदरी पस्कचारी सतायने वंच कापतरुभ्यश्च कृपसिन्धुभ्येव च पातितनां पावेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभो नित्यानन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
हरे कृष्ण
हरे कृष्ण।
सो अबाउट 15 मिनट्स अगो आई थॉट आई वाज गोइंग टू गेट नो होल क्लास डिस्कसिंग आई रीड सम न्यू एडिशंस टू द बेगर, and I wanted to read a new entry. But then I was thinking, as I was dressing, and I apologize for being late, I think it's important that we are more time conscious. Matter of fact, much of what I'm going to be speaking today is just about that. But I was somewhat backed up this morning with something. So the last 15 minutes, I thought, no, better I address some heart-to-heart issues, some even more applied issues, because one, so few of you were here yesterday, so we did not have regular class, we saw a video, and two, as I discussed when I came in from Africa, that I won't be physically around as much. I'll be traveling a lot. As a matter of fact, I'll be making arrangements tomorrow that when I leave next weekend, I'll go to Suriname, and then to Trinidad, and then to Jamaica, and then I'll come back for a short time and a few other places, and then on to Europe and to India. So I wanted to do some slight update, not much because there's no time for that. Just as I said when I came in from Africa, that we had a new year now. Each year means a chance to now open up another chapter. And so there are many chapters that's behind us. There's a lot of chapters that's in front of us. And it's necessary that we move quickly. So I discussed also that we won't have the ability or the time to procrastinate in some ways as we have. In some cases, let's say it's fortunate but unfortunate, that it's like, you know, when the final examination comes, at that point you either are learning or have learned the lesson or you haven't. You've learned the skills, how to study, and then the examination comes and you pass. And if you haven't, then it's kind of too late in one sense. Although it's never too late for spiritual growth, but one can be late in missing out on opportunities to grow. So we're in a such a time scheme now. Now it's 1997, and everyone is getting a little older. Everyone is getting older. The planet is getting older. The basic patterns of material culture is getting older and deteriorating. And so many, just as material culture is deteriorating, we see so many attacks is happening everywhere in spiritual environments, and attacks is happening to every person. Attacks means chance to grow, of course. So I mentioned, and I asked those who weren't here, I came all the way from Africa, from Amsterdam here, to go all the way back halfway around the world to Australia. I spent one day and I spoke some significant things. But I understand that some of you may didn't pick up the tape, and that's unfortunate. So you should have, because we won't always try to fill you up, fill you in, because we have to move on. And that will be a constant theme, rushing. Yesterday, somebody asked if all GBC devotees work so hard, because she's acted as personal secretary. She sees from morning to night until late in the night, you know, we're constantly working. So many things we're doing at the same time. Here, other projects in America, and so many things around the world simultaneously. We see only basically one or two aspects of our particular involvement. And so I was explaining that this is the nature of devotional service. If you're trying to coordinate the devotion, then it means there is no real private life, there is no vacation. There's always the idea of being available for service. And when you're in the house is on fire, there's no question of taking things easy, because the idea is the house is on fire. You have to get as many people out of it, and get yourself out of it, and minimize the negative effects. So it's like damage control. And so the house is on fire. In that sense, the planet is on fire. The body. See, everyone should be noticing how different pushes, vagas, are happening in their own life, that there's so many things that are beginning to stir up. The best and the worst of you is coming out. You should all begin to see that very clearly. It's not just an accident that this is happening. This is a phenomenon that's taking place, in a sense. I gave some discussions about what I did when I was with my leaders in Africa. It was the shortest time I was there, but I think it was one of the most potent times, because the understanding is that we must have more quality association. We must learn how to do more potent things in a shorter time and to be able to get more positive results. So of course, I was pleased to see that I hadn't been there in a year and 3 months, and so many places where we had purchased land when I was last there, now we have built structures and devotees are living in those structures. One country after another, and so that was impressive to see. Impressive to see how we have less devotees, but the devotees who are there having greater sense of maturity about how to access what's necessary. So what I did this time, I wasn't going to be there so long, so I spent about 5 or 6 days just only with my leaders. Normally I would spend about 3 days, and then I started moving around. But I spent longer time because I wanted the leaders to be more fixed in what's necessary, to do more cleansing, and to be able to give better care to the devotees. So a couple of questions I mentioned for those who were here, if you didn't hear the tape, which we won't do much backtracking. But I mentioned that in those 6-7 days, we had intensive discussions, seminar, workshop format. And some of the things that we discussed was, first, I wanted each of the leaders to explain how they took, first I asked how they were able to maintain their Krishna consciousness in spite of the physical, spiritual master not being physically present. The understanding was that I wanted the leaders to be able to check in on each other and to see how the science of Krishna consciousness is being implemented. Why? Because one, we don't sufficiently learn from each other, and two, everyone does not grow in the same pace, the same way. Everyone does not hear the same way. And in associations, you can learn from good examples. You can learn from success. You can learn from results. Palena Parachiyati, we have to judge things also by the results. So I knew distinctly that 2 or 3 of my leaders were not taking good care of the devotees, were becoming mechanical, and even one had fallen, was falling down. So the idea was to bring 9 or 10 of them together, because I wanted them this time to learn more directly from each other, from how the science is, when it's employed, what the effects of it is, and what happens when you don't employ it properly. So, as we had the devotees to discuss amongst themselves how they maintain strong Krishna consciousness in spite of the spiritual master not being physically there, not physically given instructions. And so they began to explain. It was very revealing for each of them, but very revealing also for the ones who didn't access the science, to understand more about the internal connection with spiritual master if you play the science and access the science. You see the growth experience that happens, the realization that happens from dreams, from revelations, from prayers, from meditations, etc. And so this was the first thing. Second thing was for them to explain, mainly to each other, because the idea was to learn and to see what is happening, what is not happening, what is working, what is not working, and what is not working, why it's not working. Next thing was to explain in summary format, since that time, special situations that they wanted to elucidate to the other leaders of how they were taking good care of the devotees who they were in charge of. Again, to take away from the point of people thinking that as you are an administrator and a manager, that you are just automatically doing things that's for the well-being of others, because physical results are happening. See, sometimes when there is physical results, then we consider that because the physical results are there, then everybody's happy because there is external progress. But it's not all, they don't always go hand in hand. Results are just not based on just the physical achievements, but it's based on the physical along with the internal counterpart. So the idea was to let, because in one sense, practically every project had advanced externally. No question there. That was wonderful. But we wanted more than that. So we wanted devotees to explain how they are taking care of the devotional creepers, taking care of the consciousness of those who they are in charge of. One thing to provide food, to provide buildings, etc., etc., but how are we taking care of their spiritual wealth along with the physical counterpart? Most things, both things must be there. It's not sufficient to say that we're giving them philosophy, we're giving them understanding, and that's good. Or is it sufficient to say that we're seeing that they get the proper clothes, the proper medical attention, that they have facilities, their own facilities now? That's not, both of those things must go together. So the idea was to share so that leaders would be able to learn from each other where there was something very positive, to see how they can implement it in their situation, if it applied, and where there was lacking, so that those who were not properly activating the science would see, would feel embarrassed, would look close at themselves and get on the mark, or either step aside. So the other thing we did, we asked everyone to consider, if you had never come in contact with Krishna consciousness, what would be happening in your life? What do you see that would be going on in your life? From the friends that you used to hang out with, from your ideas, your aspirations, what was happening in your life before you joined, if you had not come in contact, what would probably be what things you would be doing now? We wanted devotees to share that. A lot of realizations came from that. The idea was to help them to appreciate what is happening in their life so that they can get a closer understanding of how Krishna has a system. But also I explained to them, well, the second part. So as they looked at it, they looked at friends that they know, some were successful, some were not. They saw those who were successful, that their psychological state was not healthy, that their understanding of higher reality was not there, and they saw that in many cases they did not want to follow that, pursue such things. Or they're happy that there was a shift in their life. Or they see that many were even materially unsuccessful, and they realized that if they had went on as they were doing, then perhaps it would have been the same way. Some were dead. Some traveled this place in the world, and some have been married and divorced 5-6 times. So many different things. So this idea was to look at that. And then we asked them, now that you have come in contact with Krishna consciousness, leave. Consider that you bloop tomorrow. Never do enter into Krishna conscious environment again. What would you do? What is your idea? What is your plan? What would you do? And we had them to think about it. We gave them a day to think about it. Come back in the workshop format. And after that, to discuss. Okay? The idea was that so many times the mind makes us think, what am I doing? Is this really worth it? I should do something else. All right, then look at it and see. And then we explain, now, if as you look at what was possible in your life that you could do, if you feel that that's a priority and you feel comfortable with it, leave and do it. Because it means that your spiritual life is not serious. That your material concerns are first foremost and your spiritual life is secondary. So act upon those material things until finally you get it out of your system, hopefully in this lifetime, to then to be a proper devotee. That if there is something, anything that you feel is more important than your being a spiritualist and you're ready to do that, even if you had to leave your spiritual life, then best if you leave it, because it means you're not a serious spiritualist, and therefore being honest, gross, active, productive materialist until finally you realize that that's not sufficient, you want something else, then maybe you will be able to access that in this lifetime or the coming near lifetimes. Also, we explain that consider material desires you have in general. Make a material list. We gave them a day to do that. Make a list of their material desires. Any material desire, we said, that you have is very strong. That's interfering with your spiritual life. He said, now, that's why you want to go back to God here. Because there cannot be imperfection in the material world, in the spiritual world. Material world is where there is imperfections and where desires are separate from Krishna. We may have certain notions that we can't transcend right now, but if our material desires in any area is stronger than our spiritual, if our greatest desire is that we want to be famous, if our greatest desire we want wealth, if our highest desire, most foremost desire, we want beauty, we want good health, all of those things are things that are part of the material universe, which you will have to come back and to have a chance to do that until you have the greatest desire that you want to come. The greatest desire that you want to be a spiritual being and connected with the spiritual realm, and you see everything else as secondary. Everything else is tolerable. Everything else is something you have to move through because you're in the physical body, and therefore you have to maintain it, and therefore you do that as a secondary thing. And this is not just Krishna consciousness. Every single religious system says you must put nothing before God. It's just that Krishna consciousness is the science of that more. So if we have any desire, if we love anything more than our love of God, then we have to have more chances to indulge in that. If we claim proprietorship of anything more than the idea that we are servants of God, that we're all for the Lord and the Lord for all of us, then we have to be in environments where that prevails. We are leaving the spiritual world because all desires are fulfilled. And when there is some desire for something separate from the Lord, then one is given a chance to have that fulfilled by being in temporary material bodies to have chance to access such things. So some of this is in the report that should be ready, hopefully, that you'll have. So I'm not going to go deep into this. We'll move on to other countries and other experiences in our present situation. So we have these sort of things that we write up in the summary reports, have them written down. The idea is so that you can travel with us as we are going to different countries, we're having different experiences, but also that you look and see what is being discussed to see how it applies to you and how you can use it. It's like this last one. You look and see where you have material desires that are interfering with your spiritual life. That means that anything you're doing materially is causing you not to follow the principles, it's causing you not to be able to hear, it's causing you not to be able to associate, then it means that is a priority for you. And Maya, through Krishna's arrangement, will give you a chance to put more energy into that because that's where your greatest desire is. Whatever your greater desires are, then Krishna will help you to fulfill those. So it's your greatest desire that you want Krishna, that you want transcendental life, and you tolerate other things. As one is enjoying the environment of the prison house, then one continues as a prisoner because one fits into that environment. As one enjoys the environment of the insane asylum, then one fits in with those patterns and one will continue because one feels comfortable, one has locked themselves in, one is identifying with, one is acting in that mood as if it is the reality, and therefore one will continue. But as one is in the insane asylum and realizes this is a ridiculous place, I want out of here, let me do the necessary to move and transcend, then one becomes more of a candidate for release. And one is around criminals and one feels completely unaligned, one feels completely out of station, then one will act in such a way that there will be a difference and will have a greater chance to be paroled. But if a person is accepting the environment of incarceration, settling in, then they go on because they have taken that sort of those patterns, and therefore the future will give them the same. So when I rushed in, I went in to, and I mentioned that this year we're going to have a major convention in Ghana. We're asking our devotees as much as possible from America, as well as South Africa and other parts of Africa, to come, and we're going to have at least a week of festive activities, major convention. And those devotees who are coming from America, then we will also tour other of the African countries. And we'll be working on many levels with the devotees, with the academic community, with the political community, some international players, to do many things all at the same time. So those who can, plan yourself for such. So that will be Janmashtami time next year. And that's somewhere down, I think, in September, or you got a calendar, September. Now, when I came in from a 32-hour flight from Sierra Leone, and then to Europe, and then here, stayed for literally a few hours, and then I went on for another 28-hour flight, or maybe a 33-hour, because I missed the connection. So, main thing is that I was asked to come and to, again, give the keynote address for the Social Development Conference. We've had about five of these conferences in different parts of the world, and by Christian's arrangement, I've given the keynote address for most of them. We had similar last year in Mayapur, International Festival. So in these discussions, we're looking at the various ashrams, meaning the different orders of life. We're looking at the youth, we're looking at the brahmachari life, celibate student, we're looking at the renounced life or sannyas life, we're looking at grihastha life, family life, and seeing how these orders can go on more successfully, how they can interact better, create greater sense of spiritual family, and also to look at what mistakes have been in the past, what our present situation is, how we learn from that, and where we have to go in the future, and what's necessary to go there. So it's a very heart-to-heart kind of discussions where different devotees are speaking on certain topics, and then we break off into small groups and tune in more to certain topics, come with some resolutions, bring it together, discuss, and come with some action plans, etc. So it was my first visit to Australia. Several times I've been on my way, had my visa, but somehow it just didn't quite happen. It almost didn't happen this time because they were calling me to come back to South Africa for several important things. And this Suriname thing. The Suriname devotees decided that they would change the date. They were supposed to be meeting with the president of Suriname to open up a new temple, and it was going to be that same time. But now they have postponed, they're trying to do that, and that would try to fit my schedule. So when I go there this time, I'll be doing such. As I had chance when I was in Africa to meet with several leaders of the countries, the leadership book has been received by them. We had this wonderful launching of the leadership book in the parliament of Sierra Leone. The candidate for vice president, the chief justice of the country, was the chief launcher, and the ambassador to Germany. He was the main person supporting it, and they've asked that we have workshops for the leaders of the country, the parliament leaders, to help them to implement these things. So already we're seeing it being given and applied since, people taking it serious. So now the president of Botswana has it, the main leaders in South Africa, Buthelezi, I gave it to him personally, came for dinner, Nelson Mandela, several people having that sense. And we're getting some of the reviews back. Yes, nice reviews have come in. We expect some more from very important international personalities. So one step after another, things are unfolding. When I went to Australia, I was also amazed to see how many devotees are getting a book from somewhere, from Krishna culture, reading it. Even yesterday, I got a call from a devotee from England, one of the past presidents of England, who was just reading the book now, was calling to ask for some clarification on some points and expressing his appreciation of it, and asking me to, from what he picked up from the book, asking me to be an arbitrator for a major conflict that's going on in that part of the country. So we wanted the book to do this. We wanted the book to be something that would not just be theory or just conceptual, but would be something that would help us, help one in a very clear-cut way to apply certain Krishna conscious principles. Now, some of this heart-to-heart discussion is due to what I experienced as I'm moving around to some of the centers now. While I was in Australia, after the conference was over, then I went to several of the farm communities. I went to other cities, flew in to visit the temples, to talk with as many devotees as possible, to listen, to hear, and to analyze. At the same time, I've been putting a little more energy in trying to understand more of what is going on in the international scene and the secular communities. And I see something very similar happening. Some time ago when I was giving the speech, I was explaining how the World Health Organization has said that after the next 15 years, that the number one problem for society that will take lives, that will cause chaos, even more than heart attacks, cancer, etc., will be mental illness. Why is that? Quietly, right now, so many people are having breakdowns. So many people are stressed out. So many people are manic, depressive. So many people are taking all kinds of drugs and tablets and whatnot, and just trying to cope. In some cases, we see it's most unfortunate because in so many of even the small, in the school systems, they're giving, kids are lining up, you know, taking, was it Prozac?
Ritalin.
And so in some cases where people don't even need it, they're being, drugs are being pushed on them in such ways because of so-called passion or whatnot. Some of these kids are just reacting to hostile environments. They're reacting to lack of being cared for. Or they're reacting to insensitive teachers. You don't want to give them the proper time and care, but rather just drug them up or see their problem as insubordination due to some dysfunctional one, instead of seeing that it's something that they can help and to give the proper care to make a change. So, you've heard many times expressed that we are in a drug culture. And it is really permeating and spreading like anything. People's minds are just being so much captured in so many unfortunate ways. So, what I've seen is that, one, we are already in the war. Two, we're already experiencing the earth changes. Just as the last few years we've been talking about the idea of devotees becoming more fixed in their social economic situation because of things that's happening to the planet. If you're just listening the last few months, you hear all these earthquakes every place, all these droughts and floods. I mean, it's just accelerating and accelerating and accelerating like anything. This is an important year for such, but this is an important year. Last year was very important for some higher realizations about other aspects, other galaxies, other universes, other forms of life. There's been a lot that was established last year in terms of finding one or two other planets, in terms of understanding that there's definitely life in other universes, in terms of a massive acceleration about the understanding of extraterrestrials. So much of the outer aspect has become more established. So much. If you just go back and look in the last 2 years of how much the planet has become more informed about psychic phenomena, paranormal phenomena. There are major shows just talking about psychic phenomena, paranormal phenomena, miracles. And millions of people are looking at these things every week, thinking about such, getting more realization about reincarnation, getting more understanding that there's something much higher than we are that's influencing things, getting a lot more understanding about phenomena that in the past people did not even take time to think about. But now, not only are they thinking about it, but they've even been entertained by such. See, this is powerful. It's powerful when you can get something to a level that it becomes a part of the social recreational experience. It means you really infiltrate. This is when you know spiritual life is very strong, when people not only accept it as a religion, as a philosophy, but it's become an integral part of their culture, as part of their social, educational, and recreational experience. It means it has really been imbibed, it is really ingrained, it is something that not only people plug into, but it's an integral part of them because they're enjoying it, they're getting exhilarated by it, it's so much part of their life space. And so that has begun to happen. Now, what's happening now, it's going to happen a lot this year, is that, this is the same that's happening with some of you now, that the best and worst comes out. As pressures go on, whatever you're holding on to, you'll hold on to that greater. Whatever you're trying to become, you'll become that more. Or whatever you're not becoming, that will be also revealed, and that will be exposed. Because as you start shaking things up, then people frantic. They become, you know, it's panic. It's chaotic. It's pandemonium. The people are feeling insecure about things that they normally can relate to, and those things are not giving them support. And they start grabbing here, grabbing there. This will be a major year for fragmentations. There's so much insecurity and so much fear. There is so much fear on this planet right now. That if you were coming in from another universe, coming in from another existence, or had ability to go out and come in, you'd be shocked to see all of the thick layers of fear. People do not trust each other. People are not certain about their jobs.
They're not certain about their children. They're not certain about their husband, their wives, their neighborhoods, their pensions, their insurance, nothing. There is tremendous fear, and fear is dangerous for spiritual life. Baya, because fear, when you're afraid of something, what do? When you're afraid, you try to protect yourself. You strike first before somebody strikes you, because you're considering it's a life-threatening situation. When you are afraid, you sometimes lose your rational perspectives, become irrational. You act on the moment instead of thinking things out. When you're afraid, it is difficult to give a real compassion and love when there is fear. Because you have to act on the moment. You're uncertain. When you feel loved, when you're experiencing love, then it's easier to give love. But when you're feeling that the environment itself is not loving, and you're feeling the relationships themselves are not sufficiently supportive, then of course you react in a way because you have to compensate for what is not coming, or you have to protect yourself, or wherever the gaps are. So people are having that, like anything. And that's causing people to act more on lust, it's causing people to act more on greed, causing individuals to be more sovereign, to be, you know, much more into egocentricism rather than trying to understand more about community, relationships, etc. So when you see this coming in your own consciousness, deal with it, you know, do not let it surface too strong. This kind of survivalist consciousness, because we were never beings to try to survive on our own. We are social entities, and we understand ourselves based on how we're getting feedback from the community, what we're giving to the community, and the feedback. That's one of the unfortunate things about modernity. Modern day society constantly pushes the individual to think that community is not important. Just live your own truth, seek out after your own wealth, your own benefits, and that's it. And it's okay. And therefore, that's every man, every woman, every group, every race, every political party, every gender, for him or herself. And what do you have when you have everybody doing their own thing? You have simply chaos, yeah. Anarchy. That's right. It's an amazing competition rather than cooperation. And everyone suffers that way because you don't get the synergistic effects or the symbiosis effects. Synergistic is that many people come together, many units come together, the ultimate result is greater than what would have taken place by the individual parts. Symbiosis is that what takes to fulfill a system that when many people come together, it takes less than it would take to fill it up or to supply if each individual is having to receive, etc. So community creates that sense of ability that if a strong community, everyone can enjoy and experience protection and move better than they could if they had to struggle by themselves. So we see, and this is one of the reasons that we decided to speak briefly in this way instead of giving our regular class, because we're seeing that secularly and spiritually that people are either getting weaker due to economic, social, political pressures, psychological, and having this distress and going to drugs, going to alcohol, taking shelter of other material things because they're just not able to cope. And spiritually, people are either falling down or advance. There is no neutrality. There is no middle ground. There is no, maintenance only. No. That if you are not growing in your spiritual realizations, commitments, determinations, and having stronger priorities, then you are falling. You see that in your own lives. You think, well, I'm just maintaining, trying to get myself together. You fall, you've already fallen, and you will fall more. You don't realize that you've fallen. If you are seeing the sufficient dangers, having greater sense of gratitude about what it means to be a spiritualist, then you will try harder to use what you have, access what you have, and you will grow. See, when, you know, there's nothing new that I'm saying. When attacks get stronger, empowerment opportunities also become stronger. Maya doesn't care how old you are, what race you're in, what gender you're in, and what you think of yourself. Maya will give you a tremendous kick, tremendous smack, and will try to hold you down for the rest of his lifetime if possible. Just as Krishna and his agents, they have no favorites. Their love is extended, and it's a matter of the entities who position themselves to connect with them. Maya has no favorites. Maya's duty is to let everybody know how much they are protected. When you are in the spiritual life and you are falling to Maya, it means Krishna is arranging for you to see you're not protected, so that you will get protection. Krishna's arranged for you to see that you're not covered. Krishna's arranged for you to see that you have deviated from the umbrella protection. So whether it's a new devotee, or somebody who's been a devotee for many, many years, a leadership position, it doesn't matter. That is a science. And when you are not protected, then you fall prey to sense gratification. And you start looking out of elsewhere for gratification other than for the spiritual environment. So there will be so much more, so much more chaos, so much more deviations, so much more falls, and also empowerment. And the question is, where are you going to be in that? Are you going to be one who somehow takes for granted, things for granted, and then starts backsliding? Or are you one that when final examination comes, I don't mean final in terms of end of some planet, end of some yuga, you mean final in terms of closing of a chapter and into another chapter. Final in terms of moving from one grade to the next grade. So the lectures were given, the workshops were given, the assignments were given. And then you have big major, final test, which is the test that determines whether you graduate or not. And so this is what is happening. We're moving now to the new millennium. So 1997, again and again and again. That by this 2000, that many, many things will change on the planet. For that to happen, it means we're already in the process of changing. And so as they change, the question is, what way do you change with the change? Something is moving. Which way do you change with it? Do you move with it? Do you get bumped by it? Do you fall behind it, in that sense? And we're just hoping that sufficient number of devotees will be able to not fall prey to being left behind, or will not miss a wonderful chance to grow because of just not being aware of the times. So we start off with talking about the importance of time and how we'll be rushing around a little more, not just fanatically, but the idea is how to focus with more care, more attention, and how to use the remaining moments and times of our life as things are now in a way that we get quality effect, quality associations, quality experiences. So there's so many things I could say, but I want to leave it at that, open up and have discussions. I didn't have this plan to discuss on this level. My idea was to speak more for our public audience, same time to accommodate yourself, but this is not a public lecture. We're going to put on television a video, but it's a lecture that's for our devotional community. Therefore, anything that is on your mind, bring it up and we will try to discuss such. We're having a program on Saturday. We encourage all of you to try to come. We do have these meetings on Saturdays and Sundays. Try definitely to come, not only when I'm here, but as much as you can, so that you can learn from each other, share from each other, and take advantage. Otherwise, as everything gets worse and you're part of the outside secular energy, then without getting yourself charged up, you will get captured by so many lower patterns. And if you are not taking close notes, by the time you realize it, you already have tripped so much, it'll be harder to get yourself situated. So, anyone have any questions?
What you were saying.
You have to be on the microphone.
What you were saying about the aliens, you know, people being more in tune with aliens and people being more in tune with psychics. Do you think it's because the reinforcements at the end of this, in the millennium, end of the century, is more reinforced by, you know, insane and no mental clarity being there, so it's much easier for, you know, ghosts and demons to commercially, you know, associate with people in terms of psychic networks and, you know, people, you know, whole towns citing something because the reinforcement there is not God conscious.
Mm. So there's at least three major things. First thing is that the earth planet itself is alive. The entities are part of that life expression, and according to their desires, aspirations, and activities, it creates a certain type of mood, certain type of energy, certain type of force field. So, as things are being discussed, as there are more sensible people to hear, to think about, to reflect on, then it causes a mood that draws something that complements with what most people are thinking, based on their mindset. Two, there's definitely a breaking down of some of the demarcations between some of the barriers, between some of the dimensions. It's like, say, for instance, there were times when it wasn't so easy, you know, to fly from Washington to Los Angeles. You know, a few airlines take a longer time. Now you have so many flights that are going, so easy to fly, so easy to, you know, to communicate so many different ways. So it's kind of like that. That these realms always did exist, but now it's easier to communicate, easy to experience. Some of it has happened also. Third, by so much of the nuclear testing and things like that, it has tremendous effect because it's vibrations, it affects matter, it affects the molecules. There's been a lot more going on than what's been previously talked about. So it's also causing some of the pollution and things of that nature. And the other thing is, we've always been monitored, watched, assisted, as well as attacked by other presence of other life forms. And because of that, it's accelerating. Then there is groupings of so many different types of entities who, some are just neutral, concerned about their own survival. Some are literally vampires, dealing with people on this planet. Some are very, let's say, angelic, very concerned and trying to help. There's so many different categories of extraterrestrial entities or beings from other realms who are being involved in this sense. And it's kind of always been like that, but not quite as obvious. You look at any of the folklore, you look at any of the ancient history, look at any of the, you know, the old traditions, and you see that it's always been there. Now we're just kind of becoming more tangible in that sense. Any other questions? Any question that you have, you know, bring it up because it's a heart-to-heart discussion.
So, talking about these aliens, comparatively to beings like Narada Muni, who, you know, manifest and unmanifest within this Earth planet, if there's so much activity going on today on the alien platform, how about these great sages and saintly persons? Are they also manifesting in and out of this earth plane now? And are they, what's the purpose of their being here at the moment after, I mean, at least covering themselves for some time?
Yes, they always are manifesting as well. They are, just like we have in the material world, we have the foreign service. The government has its, you know, its people who work in the foreign service. That means somebody has a career, that they may be stationed in Switzerland, in the consulate, or ambassador, or working with the ambassador or staff. And after so many years, they may be sent to Sweden, to Spain. So there are some agents who work like that. In the higher kingdoms, not the spiritual world, but in the higher kingdoms, they are helpless in this sense. There are some sages who are pure devotees. They're like planets of just special sages who interact with mature universes. And they're probably none different than the nature sitters who live in the spiritual world in the Krishna Loka. But in general, the entities in Krishna Loka, they have they have no desire. The idea of any mature universes is so foreign to their thinking, because it's places of imperfection, and it's places where they're not engaged in the eternal, you know, leelas of Krishna. However, some of those special agents, just like with the 12 cowherd boys, of Lord Vijayananda, and even some of the gopis and the manjaris. So in special incarnations where Krishna comes in different ways, then they'll come. But in general, souls from such places don't come. There, but you do have certain stages who are pure, who have become pure. In some cases, there's Siddhanta Siddhas, but they come back on commission to the spiritual universes in such ways. So they are fully aware of Krishna's pastimes fully. They have full ability to interact in such ways, but they have services of going, you know, back and forth. You may have sometimes, and that's what's something very powerful. Wherever the name of the Lord is being chanted and where there is spiritual discussions, these entities have tendencies to oversee. Now you may have sometimes community, we may have only like one or two of such entities who may come in and out. And you may have, 15, 5 or so entities from some of the higher heavenly kingdoms who interact in the environment. This is a very special environment, and according to a special being who they may be connected with. See, because it's like if you go to a country where nobody is speaking the language. So these entities then we're talking about, like Narada Muni, they are extremely exceptional because they are, none different than those who reside in the spiritual world. But not many entities like that come in and out of these places or have any desire, to. But they will when some of their own kind are actually visiting. Say, for instance, if we ask thunder to, to go some place, where there's a lot of crime, there's criminals, there's, degradation, so many things. They'll do some special work there. But then we arrange for 5 or 6 devotees to kind of monitor what's going on with them. The reason why he's doing that stuff, he's not like totally bewildered or doesn't lose track of what has to be done. It's more hellish than he thought, when he was told about the place. And now this idea to keep him there to do what he has to do, but to have contact. So that's happening in some places.
So there's no, like those coming from the spiritual world, they come on their own accord. And that is eternal.
There are some. Are we talking about Vaikuntha or Krishna Loka?
Both.
Okay.
Is there any much difference in terms of Krishna's? Is there much difference between the Vaikuntha and the Krishna Loka in terms of the Nitya Siddhas?
Yes. Because what Krishna's worship with opulence. Even though that's very captivating, it's a little easier to relinquish that association than where Krishna is worshipped, not as God, but as the perfect lover, as a perfect child, etc., etc. However, whenever Krishna comes from Krishna Loka, he always comes with the culture and the agents of the spiritual world. So such high-level agents, will be in his association because he's coming. He comes himself.
Just briefly, I'd like to ask a question about the situation within the inner earth and the beings there and what role they have playing on the present situation here in a positive and negative sense and vice versa.
It's the same. Just as on the top of the planet, you have pious and impious. In Earth, you have also pious and impious. That will also be coming out more about life within the Earth sphere. A lot of my emphasis now on life coming from other universes, other galaxies, outside of this particular room. But they were glad to get a lot more information and people understanding more about what has been happening in the inner room. So,
as you've discussed, things are becoming more and more refined and being able to identify people are making more allegiance, and as the systems now are coming down with monitoring, putting chips into credit cards and chips numbers to identify to see who's on what side. Can you give us some weaponry, some shield, or way that we can identify those that come in disguise or things that are in disguise as a question that you could ask something, a group, or something yourself when Maya attacks you and you are undecisive of, is it something you can ask yourself directly or something you can ask someone directly that they have to respond to because of what they're in control to expose so that you would know something that comes under the illusion that you can't see? Some things you will and some things you can't.
In the physical or in the subtle?
They would come in the physical, but they would be subtle. Mm-hmm.
They come in the physical, but they have hidden agenda.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
When you're in prison, do you worry so much about who did what crime, along how many years you have? Although that's interesting to know. But the thing is, it's surrounded with criminals. And some are a little worse than others. Basically, you had to see most situations like that. and those that are not are rare.
So if someone was coming to help you, is it any way to bona fide if someone is truly there as a helper or agent? Mm-hmm. Or if they're coming to confuse you more, to pull you on the other side?
It's simple. The helpers, ultimately, always talk about love of God, how to be free of sense gratification. They talk it, and their own examples show it. It's pretty simple. But even more than that, it's based on what's dominant in our own consciousness to determine what we draw. Because, you know, just like what we were saying the other day with espionage, there are no secrets anymore. With technology, with high-level communication that's available now, there are ways to know anybody's stuff. Governments all know each other's stuff. Businesses all know each other. Everybody's cheating on each other. The thing is, the misinformation. They don't know what's being given to confuse and what's the real thing. But there's, you know, if you see what's available now just in the commercial market, and you realize that's all available in the commercial market, what the people who have real access to technology, what they can do, you know. And people worry about, you know, their phones being tapped and their business being, you know, this being known. There's no secrets. You know. That there are no secrets with the mature technology, there are no secrets with the psychic technology. One's mind can be totally evaluated. One's desire is totally evaluated. If there is not spiritual practices, then every individual on the planet become more and more enslaved. It's only spiritual practices that it gives protection. If they're not accessed strongly, then you only get partial protection. See, this is why there's so much confusion now. It's like, you know, in war, there's attack. When you attack, then you tend to see how to minimize the damage. Other questions?
I want to ask a personal question. Okay, when you left, and well, since you've been gone, things have really kind of changed in my situation in terms of at work, and so I can see that all the things you talked about, the changes that are happening, the increase in fear and the increase in mental disturbance and all kinds of other disturbances has happened because like a third of the people in my department have left either voluntarily or they've been like moved out, and I can see that I have 23 years in my job, that no matter how many years in your job, how good a job you do, you know, the government, I work for the Department of Defense, they'll move mountains to get rid of you if they want to, okay? So when you left, your final guidance to me was that I should look at my self-centeredness and that I should support my husband more. So, and that I should, like, you know, overcome the self-centeredness. I've had lots of opportunities to see my self-centeredness, and that's about the stage it is. It's like seeing it, because it comes up, you know, a lot. And I am trying to, you know, empathize with people. What I find has been happening is that I'll get triggered, like on the job, and it'll take me a while to see it in a different perspective. Like I might react a while. And that is happening, you know, kind of in all areas of my life. Like sometimes I won't be able to, like, say, you know, think of Krishna or, you know, regain my balance, you know. It'll take me, like, a little while. So I guess I wanted to ask you, because it seems to me in my situation that I'm having to spend more effort to maintain the, you know, economically. I am making some progress in moving out of that situation. I guess my specific question is, I think I understand what I mean, what you said by supporting my husband, but then I think, no, you might be all wrong, because what I'm finding is that when I think, oh, I understand this, or, you know, oh, this is going to work out this way, it isn't. I mean, that's the way it is in my life. Like, you know, I think I have enough to cover this, and then something else happens, you know. So I'm looking at it as an opportunity to surrender more, because I'm very, you know, very much into controlling whatever I can. And what I've experienced in my life is often Krishna has to take it away from me before I will relinquish control. So I know I rambled, but...
No, I understand. Yeah, it's a basic consideration, is that teamship is very powerful. And teamship means that there is healthy communication between the team players. Not that one should give up their individuality. One should, you know, deny their creativity, their independence. But the idea is how to use our independence in such a way that it produces powerful cooperation, so that there's becomes win-win, in essence. You know, our Western environment always is kind of hitting us that we should be the winner ourselves. We should act upon our idea. We should see that our truth is expressed and realized. And we see that that kind of mechanistic, materialistic conception is not very healthy for spiritualists. For spiritualists, we don't want to look so much at the idea of only our idea, our comfort, even though that's an issue, it's a genuine issue. But we want to be so much living and happy that we've helped to make somebody else happy. We want to be so much fulfilled that our existence has such a positive effect on the environment. We don't want to be positive ourselves and our immediate environment is just going to hell. So we're not so concerned with, and like in a relationship of love, husband and wife, or wife and children, husband and children, instead of family, or spiritual community, it's not always the issue of being right or being wrong. It's that, how can we create the most healthy situation from the interaction? See, it's almost like in a very powerful business, the customer is always right. Now think about that. Because the business is for the customer. So even though the customer may be wrong, the customer is right. But the customer says, I don't like the color of that, I don't like the way this works. It means they're not going to buy it again, they're going to come back to the company, even though you did your best. So you want to hear what the customer has to say, because you want the customer back, and you're existing to make profits, and the customer is going to determine your profits. So what's happening with the customer is important to know. So that's in a mundane sense. In a spiritual sense, whatever is happening with the person you love, that's important. It's not just a matter of being right. It's a matter that you care about the person, and therefore you want to check in to see how now that the well-being of everyone involved in that relationship can be expressed as such. See, if the child is crying, The point is the child is crying. Something's wrong. You know, the baby's crying, so something's wrong. So that's an indicator that there's a reality that something's wrong. Now whether it's the kid, the baby is hungry, or the baby is smothering, or the baby is wet, but the reality is that there's a situation there that needs attention. And so when there is some incoherence, and we see that, oh, here's a wonderful chance, situation that needs attention. And let me see how I can position myself. What love factor is there that I need to connect with? Somebody is fearful. It means that they are disturbed that the love that should come to them is not coming to them. Somebody is envious. It means they are feeling that the love that should be coming to them is going to somebody else. You know? Somebody is angry. They're feeling that the love that was with them has been taken away. You see, everything based on the love connection, then you immediately think, okay, now, what adjustment is needed that the love is coming and felt and experienced, and rather than the feeling that it's being taken away, that it's not coming, that it's being abused, etc. Yeah, it only happens when we have less and less of seeing ourselves separate from the ones that we care about. We see that I care about this person, and therefore this is happening, that is happening. Now let's see what we can do to see that this situation is better. So when I'm saying this is supporting more, I'm emphasizing, not just sort of being chauvinistic and saying, okay, because you're a woman, support your husband. You know, but the idea is that because you are partners, be a partner. See, don't be an individual, but be a partner. That's it. Yes?
I think Christian consciousness has helped me since we've been gone. I don't react as much now we have this patient, and no one wanted the patient, and the sun came down. And I think we continue to
make it a little louder. There's a short in the mic. It's okay. There's something with the mic.
Okay, I said I've been working with this patient, and since you left, no one wanted the patient. And then one day I found out the mother was crying, and she thought that the patient was impacting on me, because the patient has gotten better. But like you said, people are still attacking me. Mm-hmm. Now that she's better, they want to know how I, and why she's living so long, she's extended, she's better, and the things that I need to know. Maybe one more thing is how I can, you know, from reacting, even from housekeeping to the, everybody just comes by, you know, and wanted to, when they see it's working, they want to put religion on you, all this spirituality. And I've been doing what you told me to do. Close the door, read the Bhagavad Gita, and chant with the patient choir. And they see the change and everything. Now they're still.
In no way is life about trying to please everyone. Yes, of course. But in your kind of work as a nurse, we have to deal with disease, sickness, and a lot of frustration and fears. Then you're constantly associating with that force field. It's like associating with disease, there's always a chance that you can become infected. And so it's just a matter of constantly rejuvenating yourself, that you have to move in those environments so that you can give and be active in sharing, but to be kind of detached at the same time. If the doctor is too detached, then how can they help the patient? But if they are so personally locked in every single case, they'll simply get very frustrated themselves. You have to care, you have to do your best, and you have to bounce back and be ready for the next exchange. By the way, this Saturday program that we're having, it's mainly going to be a sharing program. I think they're calling it with the Festival of Lights or something. And so they're going to do some things with having devotees light a candle and to express, you know, some of their realizations about their experiences in the Institute. We're going to be trying to bring in several people who haven't associated with us in quite a while, trying to encourage some of them to get more involved. So we mentioned, or maybe that was in Africa. In Africa, I was telling the leaders that we have to do two things simultaneously. Strengthen our own sort of infrastructure. At the same time, find more ways to try to reach out to people while reaching out is still possible. And I say that in a very serious way. is after 5 or 6 years, it's not going to be much chance to preach as we know preaching now. So, you know, reach out and try to, you know, don't be intimidated, you know, by people who may not have so much spiritual interest, because some of them may be stimulated by what you say, what you do. But just try to put it out there, you know. See, that's, many people's karma balances can be changed by certain spiritual contacts that they can have these next couple of years. Mm-hmm. When you see a chance to share it with someone, give them a book, explain something, give them some prasadam, I do, you know, try to do as much as you can. Any other question? In a few years, we'll be looking back at what we're doing now, these years, the last few years, we'll think, oh, how easy and how nice so many things were. you go back 10 years ago, maybe you think, oh, your job was easier then, and, you know, there wasn't as much crime, it seemed like the world was so confused, so much confusion. A couple of years from now, you'll be looking at what's going on these years, and you think, oh, it was pretty easy, then it was why did it take more advantage of certain things then?
Srila Krishna Prabhupada, before you left, you told me to do more preaching, and as usual, you know, I get really overwhelmed with my family life in terms of trying to balance, you know, the things I really have to do at home as well as what I have to do on the outside, and also being very easily influenced by the environment. So I wrote you a letter before you left last time, and since you've been back, I guess you sort of answered about things we really want to do won't be so important in the future anyway. So I'm still like confused about how to really balance those things out in terms of my own personal vows that I've taken and my own fears about driving and that sort of thing. So,
the other thing is
in the temple, I've had a real problem at the Baltimore temple, not so much with the, you know, being in the temple, but actually just trying to reciprocate the way we do at the Institute and the way you say we should do in the community. It's not really a lot of reinforcement there. And also because the devotees there are in a different mood, you know, they do distinguish, even though that barrier shouldn't be there, but I guess everybody, depending on the guru, is on a different mission and they don't see things so important. But the center of all of it is Krishna, so I find that I have a lot of problems, not so much with communication, but being taken seriously about a lot of the issues that we discussed here and a lot of the practices in terms of putting Krishna consciousness on a practical level at that temple.
This should be expected. Every temple, every zone, every leader has their own spiritual personality. And if it's a real leader, each leader has a different commission or assignment or realms of responsibilities. And we'll draw certain souls according to, you know, to that connection. And should be organizing their work based on what their service is. So if some of the devotees there are connected with another type of leader, then there may be a certain emphasis based on that leader's service to his guru, or a certain emphasis based on the immediate manager of the project, the temple president. That's to be expected. The idea is that use what you have learned, not impose it on anyone in any way that causes anybody to be uncomfortable, but the position of having more caring and having greater loving relationships, that's a universal thing. So that should always be there. Where we're emphasizing more about social issues, emphasizing more about the physical environment, emphasizing more about positioning ourselves for alternative communities, rural community, etc. That should not be expected to be the role of most leaders.
I am a spiritual, social activist. So therefore, there will be a different emphasis. There are those who are pure philosophers and pure personalities, and that is their service. There are those who are powerful in terms of their administrative abilities, and they can organize things in the most fantastic way for the spiritual community. They may not be sensitive to secular situations. And there are some who are very astute, actually, who don't have, you know, sufficient, you know, spiritual stamina. The important thing is that where one is connected with one should be genuine. As I was telling many devotees that travel around the world, is that each devotee should make, especially with guru-disciple relationship, make a genuine connection with a spiritual teacher. It doesn't matter who that teacher is, if it's in the Vaishnava line, but make a genuine connection and follow that and surrender. So let Krishna come in and come out. So if they are surrendering to their genuine connection, their connection is emphasizing, perhaps say more emphasis on Guru Kula, or their connection is emphasizing more emphasis on a certain aspect of devotional service, then that could very well be the commission that that person has for his guru. You look at the Goswamis, and you'll see that Jiva Goswami was our greatest scholar. Raghunath Das, so much exemplifying, let's see, renunciation and austerity. You go one person after the next, you see that even though they were working as a team, that there was a different emphasis according to the particular flavor of that particular person's service. So you should understand in general that the way I'm writing, the kind of classes I'm giving, the way I dress, the way I'm going about and doing things, the way I'm being asked to do things. I'm saying this to clarify so you understand a little better. You should have understood that already, that I am not just a philosopher. I'm not really a philosopher. I'm not just a spiritualist. That's not my interest only. And I'm surely not just interested in, you know, national or international global concerns. I am an activist. I am a spiritual revolutionist. And therefore, the things I do will be of that spirit. So when you evaluate situation, you have to evaluate based on what that connection is. Somebody's teaching Christianity, you have to evaluate Christianity based on what is bona fide in Christianity. Somebody's teaching Islam, you have to evaluate based on the Sadhu Shastran Guru of Islam. Somebody's a Vaishnava, you have to evaluate based on the Sadhu Shastran Guru. Then you have to look at what aspect is that person representing. It's no accident that I'm being the major one of the major persons called for the social development issues. It's no accident that I'm being called more and more for leadership. No accident that I'm doing more than outreach preaching. No accident that I'm being called to do more arbitrating, because I am a social spiritual activist. So that confuses some people sometimes. Because it's not my duty to emphasize some other things, because it's not my mood. It's not my service to my guru. And if you're offensive and think that it's not with me, that's your own problem. Some people may think, well, I don't talk philosophy more. Some people may think, why I emphasize so much other things about chess. Almost every lecture I give, I emphasize about devotees being able to deal with tests in their lives, realizing that there's challenges, how to move with such things, because that is my particular service. But one should connect where they feel comfortable and should try to get their protection, because if everyone is going to need a lot of protection, you'll fall. Definitely have to have protection. Any other questions?
How come some people seek a... How come some seek spiritual paths of substance while other ones seek spiritual paths of sustenance?
It's according to the entity's desires, and Lord in the heart will arrange connection. Some people think that spiritual life is basically an eradication of things that's interfering with their material concerns. Most people think that the idea of God, God people, God consciousness, is to allow them to enjoy sense gratification with less obstacles. Some people are considering that spiritual life is some accelerated mystical gymnastic experience. So therefore, they're more interested in psychic phenomena, they're more interested in metaphysics rather than spirituality. Some people want to have the kingdom of God without God, therefore they're not interested in the personal aspect. So every soul is different, and that's part of the beauty of life, and even in the spiritual situations, that's part of the beauty. One must express and see how to do that connection genuinely, whatever it is. So
like I had one of my leaders in Ivory Coast with me. He was actually one of my big leaders. He was a regional secretary. And he left the movement for about 5 years. He joined Sai Baba, he joined Sri Chinmoy, he joined so many different things. And recently he came back a couple of months ago and he wrote me an interesting letter. And he said, well, I left because I had a problem with you. He said, my problem with you is that I felt you were too much talking about material things. And I wanted to have a pure spiritual teacher. So therefore I went to Sai Baba and I went to Sri Chinmoy with so many other things. He said, and after 5 years I had so many realizations. He says, now I'm coming back and I want to beg forgiveness for this, for that. And one of my regional secretaries, my regional secretary of Ghana. He was so close to me that he became so familiar. And because he saw I was doing as much of material energy, he thought, maybe this is all this person is about. So anyway, he went for a real spiritual master. He thought he found somebody who deals with mysticism. He tried that, and he found this one, that one, and after a while he decided, okay, so I dabbled here, dabbled there, did this, I did that. And now he's my president of Ivory Coast. So see, we have different desires and appetites, different things that, you know, we feel comfortable with. And the thing is, then, connect with what one feels comfortable with, just make sure it's bona fide, and then follow it through.
Hare Krishna, Srila Krishnapada. I have two questions. The first is, it has to do with your being a social or spiritual leader. Did you evolve as you became initiated? Did you know this when you first got on the path of Krishna consciousness, or were you assigned this from your spiritual, was this an assignment from your spiritual master?
No, you heard my mother speak a few times. My mother will tell you that that's always in my life. Always in my life. Anyone else?
Mm-hmm. The second question, in listening to one of your tapes, you talk about your joining the Noetic Society. And on that tape, you speak about astronauts, once they go to the moon, they encountered other life forms. As a result of several of those types of experiences, some of those astronauts join psychic and physical societies, and some of them have even had mental breakdowns. This is for your book. And the question for me, and it might help the readers, is what type of experiences did these astronauts have when they interacted with the other life forms? Were these negative or positive experiences? Could you elaborate on that, please? Mm-hmm.
There's a few categories. Some of them, when they saw the Earth planet, they realized the Earth planet was an entity. Some of them, when they traveled out, in almost 90% of cases, they were accompanied. They saw other spacecrafts that were watching them, were monitoring. Some of them, when they realized how much they had, see, this is a hard thing to say. There are people, and this, some of you working in high-level governments positions, be very careful, federal government. There are people who are leading double and triple lives, that they have been actually programmed. Their minds have been captured by government agencies. And they can be turned on and turned off. There are people who also have been kind of extraterrestrials who can be turned on and turned off. There's so much of that going on now that it is phenomenal. The number of people who are being used, who have become slaves, actually. They are slaves of the modern scientific exploitative age. And so some of these people who get to that level, they become slaves. And they were thinking and considering that they had a good position and that things were going on nice. And then at some point they realized they didn't have free will. Some of them are just, you know, they have mental breakdowns when they're trying to get away from this. So, there are people who work in the Pentagon,
who, when they go to the hospital, they get implants without their knowledge. There are people who get high-level jobs, very sensitive jobs, and they're monitored like anything. The people who are being used, women who are being used like sex slaves, to transmit very high-level information. And they go from, they're sent to government leaders, presidents, ambassadors. They get information from them, they give them sex, and they forget everything that they're told to forget. And they go back and they remember what they have to remember. This is a very hellish place. And most of the leaders on this planet are heavy tyrants. And this is why some of this stuff is gone the way it is. Things that the presidents of these countries do, that if you think some of the stuff is in the tabloids of it, some of the things that these presidents do is completely demonic. Being in these powerful positions is no accident. They have mastered manipulation of power. And life means very little. On the higher levels, life means very little. It's about power, it's about control, it's about money. And you see, they're right on national TV. They can shoot Kennedy, they can shoot Dr. King. People find out about it and they say, so what? Writing books about all this stuff, and they say, so what? And it'll go on for the next person if they want to take out. What controls the real power is very demonic, and they have ability to, you know, get away with themselves because they're positioned themselves in so many ways. Because they are supported also by empowered entities. You make contracts with empowered entities. They're supported by empowered entities. And see, things that the fight is going on so many different levels. There's some of those who can do so much in the day-to-day society because they're backed up. They're protected. You said the demons are protected. The devotees need more and more protection. Some of the stuff is gradually coming up, you know. Some people are beginning to find out that, you know, they got a schizoid type of personality. They're finding out they're in some of these jobs and their whole life changes because they become slaves in some of these high-level positions. I mean, some of the top-level CIA guys get slaves. They do devious things to other people, but they're slaves themselves. They're actually locked in themselves. You see why we hang up with this on television.
Thank you for this opportunity. Once again, you're always able to, I guess, tune into the collective consciousness of the group. I have so many questions, but I'll just try to ask two. Maybe somehow they'll merge. You spoke about traveling to Africa and your meetings with the leaders there, and just the exercise that you took them through. And being in leadership capacity, concern about my spiritual growth as well as the environment, just seeing maintenance as well as deterioration, you know, with the devotees and their services. So, and I'm including myself as well. And I'm just wondering, as I was sitting back trying to phrase this question, it was almost, I said to myself, you know all the answers, you know, you're just not doing it. But I'm wondering, for us as a group, whom I feel we don't have a strong nucleus, and it's probably because of a lot of reasons, the transitions, the distance, individual devotees' own personal challenges, but there's not a strong central nucleus or, you know, a centrality of energies coming together to work towards some end, some goal. And I find it very difficult in trying to coordinate services. It's almost like working in slow motion. You can see things, how things can come together very quickly and move to the next step. But in trying to do that with 10 people, you know, and there's no central locality, and people are really, you know, off into, you know, their own situations, then in the meantime I get real kind of bored. And you've said, you know, that we're, you know, the nature of human activity is pleasure seeking. So my mind starts to wonder, well, what else can I do, you know, in another environment that I can get more pleasure out of?
but still spiritual, but still, you know. And I see that happening also here with devotees. A lot of them are feeling more, I guess, inspired to do more service in Potomac. And, you know, when we have Brahmins meetings, a few Brahmins show up when we're trying to, you know, we come together and we try to put together a meeting where we can come together and begin to talk about shared visions and taking a look at evaluating ourselves and how to get the impetus going. And then, you know, less than half Brahmins show up. And so, you know, you have a New Year's Eve activity, and then again, you're planning about, you know, we'll have all the devotees together, and maybe we can come together and, you know, do some activities. And so this goes on and on and on until I personally begin to kind of lose enthusiasm and momentum. Even though I'm getting the services done, I know I'm not giving 100%, and I know my energies are beginning to, you know, become more, displaced. So I guess the question is how can I begin to develop enthusiasm so that I can infect the environment more? I know it's, you know, it's reciprocal. The environment can also, you know, impact us. But as a leader, you know, where can we begin as leaders, Brahmins, coordinators, you know, those in responsible tasks, to begin to, you know, move things faster, you know, forward more. To begin to, as you say, you're not waiting, and I understand that because I listened to your tapes and you're saying nothing, you've been saying the same thing for years and years and years, and it shocks me sometimes to go back and listen. And even, you know, it's just mind-blowing that I've missed so much of what you said that could have helped me in certain situations. So that's one question. Where do we begin here at the Institute to... you know, to help, because it's so much. We're trying to develop the infrastructure, and that's taking time. You see devotees on the fringes who, you know, who we're losing. And, you know, that's part of our role is reaching out and trying to keep everyone connected. So, you know, where does one begin, and how do I personally, you know, impact myself so that I can impact others?
Okay,
that's
a good question. That is complex to me. You got some get wounded, some even chronically. We do have some, even though we get wounded, we bounce back. We have some who don't get wounded. And that must be expected. Even though the idea is to try to minimize the casualties, minimize those who get wounded, especially those who don't bounce back. So the fact that something is happening means that there will be differences. That there will be some people who will watch and see something get strong, then they'll hop in. Some individuals who will be pulled by, as you say, a stronger nucleus. And people unfold at different levels. You answered your own question when you said, well, maybe you should consider doing something that's more pleasure. It's coming from that. Like when I asked my devotees in Africa, if they, they should think about what they would be doing if they weren't devotees. If they felt very strong about that, they should pursue it. So if we are looking mainly for pleasure for ourselves, it'll be very frustrating. But if we're looking how to please Krishna, please Guru, how to please Sadhu, then we will get realization and we will get pleasure. Then Krishna will see that comes to us. But as we're looking for the pleasure, looking for the respect, looking for the control, looking and feeling that everybody should be better, which they should, then we can become very discouraged. So it's almost like what I told Mother Nandakini, that we have to be involved as best as we can, do what we can, not be impersonal, but the same thing has to be detached. You see, almost like a doctor. A doctor shouldn't be impersonal. A patient will die. Or there'll be malpractice. But if that doctor locks in every single person they're dealing with too emotionally, they will not be able to be effective. So it's caring, giving your best, bouncing back, going to the next situation.
Thank you.
knowing that you've done what's necessary. So, management spiritually is more difficult than material management. Material management, if people don't act properly, you fire them, or you deduct their salary, or you find other ways, material ways, to make a shift. In a spiritual situation where it's volunteer, and where you have to dealing with everyone with different consciousness, different background, different realizations, different priorities, along with so many other problems that are just part of existing.
A couple other, you know, guys also was quite experienced. But the idea is now that have to move on. So, in essence, it means always plan, and I'm not in any way suggesting that you plan based on mediocrity, you know? Make your plans based on the best of what your intelligence can put together. But then, what you have at the end, then see how to use that. And just accept that it's Krishna's mercy that, you know, what you have, so, you know, is what you can use.
I just have one last question. I was listening to a tape recently when you were saying that that it's impossible to surrender, for one to surrender on their own, that there must be an internal connection with Guru to help with that process. So that helped me a little bit more. So, you know, I was thinking that I could kind of do this on my own gradually and, you know, when I was ready.
There's other point too, right? I think really. Like some of the stuff I have to do in terms of my personality, but because I'm accepting for my guru, then strength is coming. Mm-hmm. I'm changing every year. Strength is coming. I don't really want so much to do some of the things that I'm doing. You know, I don't so much like to have to rush into these all these social issues and all this stuff, and into having to do this kind of letting a lot of the external stuff. I mean, right now I'm just praying. I mean, I practically made a prayer yesterday, and I thought I should do that. That I don't want to be involved in the executive, you know, aspect of you know, this kind of thing. And I had that same prayer last year, the year before. But I just saw that it was what Prabhupada wanted. And I'm just, you know, thinking about that. Let me do more work in some of the healing aspects of the movement, and I have to be in a position as an executive member, because there's a certain connotation that comes along with that, a certain thrust, a certain amount of attentiveness to certain things. But I'm hoping that I don't. I think there's a good chance that I won't, because I feel there's things that Prabhupada wants me to do internationally that I would be a little limited in having that position. But at the same time, if it's ultimately what I feel that Prabhupada wants, then I'm going to do it.
And I guess that's my prayer to you is, you know, you wanted me to accept several services not too long ago, and I didn't feel like I was in a position to do them all at that time, and it had a lot to do with me wanting to surrender, you know, not wanting to do what I thought it would take for me to do, and that was more surrender, and that was giving up, I don't know what, I haven't been able to identify it because I don't have a job, and, you know, other than a diet, there's not much there to hold on to, but, you know, I found myself really, really struggling with taking the next step towards my process of surrender. So, and since then, I noticed that I used to pray a lot, you know, to you, that for you to help me, you know, to become more of a servant. And now I notice I don't make those prayers because I felt like...
Pray would make me well.
Yeah, and that, you know, I didn't have the courage, right, you know, to follow through on the prayers that I had prayed. So I'm sort of in this, this in-between stage of, you know, not really being fulfilled and not really being happy, you know, but yet not feeling like even if another test came tomorrow, I'm prepared to, you know, just give up whatever it took, you know, to fulfill your instructions. So I guess I'm wondering, you know, what I can do other than, you know, the improving myself to, you know, to develop that internal connection with you in order to, you know, have the courage to move forward. Because like you said, things are speeding up, they're happening fast. I don't know, you know, as Krishna's been kind to us and merciful that he's allowed you to be here with us for so long, you know, pushing and pulling all the way, but like you're saying, you're not going to have that kind of luxury anymore, and that those who cannot catch up will be left behind. And so I do want to be one of those who can be in a position to help you more, you know. There's so many of us sitting in this room, you know, who have so much to offer, so many skills, but it's because, you know, of our own, inability to surrender that I cannot, you know, give you 100% of what I have to offer. So I'm asking you to help me personally to do that. And then what are some steps I can take to transform these fears that I have?
Believe it or not, Krishna's already doing it. Just as I mentioned about using what we have, we're looking at our own life. Krishna has given you a situation where you don't have to work, but little income is there. You have a certain amount of time to do certain things. You go around the room. Krishna is arranging so many things for each of us based on our karma and based on our desires. Krishna will, you know, will assist. We just have to be sharp enough that as things unfold, that we take advantage of it. And the best way to do that is, I keep saying it's simple, but the best way to do it is just to constantly get into the spirit of just thanking Krishna. When we're sick, thank Krishna. When people say good things about us, thank Krishna. When people say something harsh about us, thank Krishna. Krishna sends us money, thank Krishna. Krishna takes money away, we thank Krishna. And then whatever is happening in our life that we need to move through, we'll just move through it. And we'll go to the next thing, next thing, next thing. We just thank Krishna, thank Krishna, thank Krishna. See, some of you have been with me in previous lifetimes. And as long as you don't get too fallen, you're going to be carried. You're going to be pushed, by the way. But you can make it a lot easier. There's even, I mean, even one of the reasons we're having this program Saturday, that there's some souls who kind of come in and come out, but they're connected. They're karmically connected with you. And so they're suffering, and we have to create an environment so they can access what's necessary for them. And so we do more outreach in such a way, but there's certain souls who are connected in certain ways. And so as things happen, they will be moved by the general energy. But it could be easier. Like you said, it's a lot more if we had more sensitivity, more leadership. But still, it'll go on. But it could go on a lot faster, a lot easier in such ways. Any others? I don't like that. He's like the Rupa, I understand, because you have to help him. He's helped me in the previous lifetime, but he's fighting, you know, and he's suffering. And you have to help him. It's going to be difficult unless this accessing him. Basically, much of devotional service repeats itself. So many things repeats itself. Those who work in the foreign service, it repeats. And so you pick up some of the souls, some new things happen. But many things I repeat. It's like Ujjamabadi having her dream of seeing me before she physically saw me. So what does that mean? That means there's a connection from a previous life. How is it that before she physically sees me, she sees me in dreams, and then one day she sees me physically? It means this something. So even though she can be in this mind, that mind, as long as there's a stronger desire to be spiritual, then there'll be hope. But when things get chaotic, then our desires go in different ways. That's what's dangerous. You know, that's why I was saying when Raghunath Das was mentioned about Baltimore, is that various souls may have certain types of responsibilities. So don't impose on someone who may be also under a bona fide connection, and the emphasis is a certain way. That may be their particular service. You are under an umbrella of spiritual social activism. So, you know, don't look down at those who may be more fundamental, or don't get intimidated by those who seemingly may be more avant-garde in this way, that way, or whatever, because you have a certain thing. And if you're not comfortable with that, that's also okay. But do something that you're comfortable with. So we bob in and out in these situations, and out of cultural things, and out of political things, because that's all part of the service. And you see it's beginning to unfold more, and unfold a lot more in the next few years. Next few years, what would normally have taken 4 or 5 years in the past of unfoldment will happen. 6 months, a year. This is the nature of war. But this use, and this is for all of you, when you are trying to do something, do your best of what you can offer. But at the same time, whatever is the final thing, use it. You look at Prabhupada's life, that's what he did. He could have did so much more if we as leaders weren't fighting amongst ourselves. We were fighting, so much of Prabhupada's time was dealing with keeping leaders from fighting each other, dealing with leaders from falling down. Sometimes he wasn't able to translate because he was being so disturbed. But still, he used what he had. And he started this worldwide movement in a few years. But basically what? The initial devotees who started the movement were hippies, beatniks, and acid heads. I mean, they were people who were looking for no authority, people who didn't want bureaucracy, were turning away from material bureaucracy. Last thing they wanted was structure. They thought life was about a certain kind of expression of freedom, which is more or less animalistic because it was, you know, this free love. And he took people like that and gave them rules, gave them regulations, cleaned them up, and sent them up. You realize Prabhupada started in Germany with a devotee who had been a devotee for 6 months. Didn't know the language. Sent him there alone. Prabhupada started in France. A devotee who didn't know anybody. Didn't know how to speak French. I mean, imagine going to some place, not know anybody, not even know the language, not even have any money. I gave you examples of how when I first went to Sierra Leone, I went to Ghana. I didn't know anybody. I went to see the library, I didn't know anybody. I went by myself first. I had one name of one person. When I first went to the library, I had one name of one person. Got there in the middle of the night. The airport was away from the city. And then the person who I was to see, he actually didn't like the person who gave me his name. that was in the middle of the night. Someplace I had the name of the director of Imagine Airways, and the guy who gave me his name found out that they didn't even like each other. And he just felt sorry for me. But here I was coming in the middle of the night in this dangerous place, you know, I was in a dhoti, an American foreigner, and he had no idea of the hostility that I was going to experience. So he just had me wait until he finished, closed everything down. He took me in his company car and put me one day in a hotel. The next day I stayed with him. Then when I sent Kendra and Vandalina, I had the contact, so at least I get to have somebody they can stay with. And then we started. One country after another. I went to Africa for 7 years. One way, I sent you guys, I was on a one-way ticket. You know, how are we going to, you know, come back? How do we start the Institute? Huh? We started in a basement on Butternut Street, a one-room basement with one little window about that size, no lights, no windows. Huh? This is how this Institute started. With six of us staying in a one room. Imagine you got to stay with your guru. You got to live with your guru in a basement. Huh? with just one little, you know, fly out window. That wouldn't even open up. There was no light. There was no light in that place. Huh? It was cold. It was damp. We all stayed in that one room basement. This is how we started. So things happened by the spiritual thrust. And you know, those of you see, I'm up there, you don't see me most of the time. You see how intense it is when I'm in the house, or we have to give you service. And my body, either they see that because they're with me when I have to give them service. You know, sometimes they're giving service for 5 or 6 hours. Imagine having to live in the same room, you know, and you work with your guru, and you have to try to be respectful all the time, and you got to live there, you know, you're in the same shower, the same bathroom, you know, you're sleeping on the same floor. You know, I mean, it's a difficult thing. This is how you saw it, this is how we started this. You know, one project after another. So, how much can be done if we use what we have? And our Krishna will let next thing. We weren't thinking, well, we have to have money then we could do it. We have to have more people. It wasn't even our zone. We didn't have any money, But then Chintamani came and she arranged to get the Howard for us. So we were then just using that because we didn't have to pay for it. And then we, you know, one thing after another. When Mother Drani came, I was just staying as an unwelcome house guest in Sanatana's house. But we went one to preach. And so she came to the program, 10, 15 people coming. She came there and, you know, she met me and we preached. So we just have to realize that we use what Krishna gives us in so much. I mean, you've all seen a little short time of what happens, what's happening in Giranagari. We just talk about earth changes. Next thing you know, we got the U-Haul, and we're packing, and half the bodies are being shipped in their place. Then when you go there, you see now that they're taking over the place. You know, they got some houses and things, and now we're about to, it's kind of secret, but now we're about to kind of enter into an arrangement with Mike, to try to see how to help us to, you know, buy the land so we can have the land for more of you to come in to build and to stay. And so many things unfolding, just we have to just kind of reflect back to what you've been told 5 years, 4 years, 10 years ago. To see, is it really happening? You know, or is it not happening? You know, we'll see. That's what's happening. So helping with this book. Now some key players are getting the book. Some people are talking about using now for workshops. People's lives are being changed. Now we're ready for the next book, the next spiritual warriors. This Mandara is just about finishing it. So a month we'll have, you know, the next one out. So the platform is there. It's just a matter of if some of you can just take your life more serious, then we can do so much more. So much more. Any other questions?
I was thankful for what you said today.
Can't hear.
Can you hear? Okay. I was saying that I was thankful for what you said today, especially around the attacks and the acceleration of challenges we're all going to be meeting. I'm meeting them.
Begin to find, right?
Oh, I mean, every day, every moment. And I was just saying that I'm finding, of course, what Krishna says is true, that my greatest enemy is my own mind. And I was reflecting on what Nandini was saying and how I add to the overall diminishing quality of life here through some of the decisions I make. And sometimes they're not even externally acted on. I just think them in my mind. For instance, like I need space. And if what I catch myself doing is reinforcing that idea, not for 1 hour, which might suffice, but for 1 week. And I find that all my actions based on that one decision that I've maybe forgotten about keep me from interacting in a quality way with the devotees here at the Institute, or keep me away because I think I need space. And rather surrendering that to internally and asking how I could serve, I hold on to that. So I find the biggest problem then is procrastination. I don't get something done that I could get done because I think I need this space. So
And that's been my major attack all along, and now it's intensifying. So fortunately, some of the things you've said over the years have penetrated the thickness of my covering. So I always ask myself, well, what would Srila Krishna want me to do? And a lot of times I find myself saying, I mean, I know what you want me to do, and I find myself saying, no, I don't want to do that, especially around the administration things. But on the other hand, I have increased, you know, I've recognized the danger of the time period, of course, the danger of the attacks coming. So I've gone back to asking myself, what do I really want? Why am I here? You know, why did I come to Krishna consciousness? And I realize that there isn't anything that I want more than I want God, or that I want, even though I'm covered a lot, I know I want my connection with you, I know I want my connection with God. That's it. I pray that if I can handle these other external things, like working, you know, with an organization. That's another one of my, you know, one of my mindsets that I often get into. Organizations are anti-life, and that when organizational consciousness comes in, it can affect the internal consciousness. So anyway, instead of going on, I'm just saying that what I'm looking at is that I make these decisions, and the worst enemy is my own mind, and then I'm trying to be alert to the decisions I make. Actually, I'm trying to be alert and saying, please, Krishna, make decisions for me. Decide for me, because my decisions are, you know, limiting, not only on myself, but they impact the devotees, and they impact my world, by the way, in the world.
It's a problem that everyone has from time to time, some more than others, is that institutions, organizations, they often seem to restrict, they seem to impose, sometimes they even seem to dictate. But no organization has ever saved anybody. But at the same time, without criterion, without structure, no one can ever do the necessary. You know, some people feel that to get them up front, that anything goes, that's not the process. That is a matter of feeling good and then acting upon such. But there are things that are there in the scriptures that are to be done. So when we hide behind organization, that's unfortunate. And when we deny the organization, that's unfortunate. We have to see that the organization is an arrangement so individuals can come together to be able to grow, to share. As long as we're disturbed by something, that's a sign that we need that experience. See? Once we're not disturbed, we understand, okay, it doesn't have to be there with us. But we're disturbed by something in the devotional community. There's something about us that needs that experience. You see? And then once we move from that, then we'll find that Krishna will give us, you know, other facilities, other organizations. So many times, the way that devotees interact is even beyond their own understanding, sometimes beyond their own control. Because Krishna will arrange, it's in the heart of everyone, will arrange to bring different devotees together so they work on each other's stuff. Bring somebody who's like very introverted, and someone who's very extroverted, and their chemistry doesn't match so well, but they can be the best help for each other, because they will help each other to see certain things about themselves. That is there. The environment for a Vaishnava and Vaishnava associations, as we're trying to become serious devotees, like a hospital. And different types of sicknesses, different types of consciousness, people taking their drugs, different ways. Some people taking a prescription, taking it help, taking it wholeheartedly. Some people not. Some people who, you know, very chronic in what their situation is. So all that's there. And it's tense. you see. But that separates the transcendentalist from the pious person who goes to heaven. The pious person who goes to heavenly kingdoms. They want peace, they want comfort, they want joy, they want personal satisfaction. The devotee wants unconditional love. That is very challenging at first. But until it's gotten, then it's very challenging. So we're really, by taking the Krishna consciousness, we're declaring war on material energy. We're declaring war on sin. We're declaring war on our false egos. We're declaring war on our previous patterns that were destructive, interfering. And that is that's a serious battle. We're not just trying to find ways to cope with situations anymore. We actually claim war against it. And that's why it's hard. That's why some people will fall back into, and this is one of the things that's happening around the world. It's one of the reasons why I'm giving this kind of presentation, is that there are many people who settled for their personal peace over the chaos that comes from the unfolding, moving through. There are many people who are, many devotees, who are selling in for their personal comforts and their personal peace. It's like when Arjuna was bewildered, and he preferred at first not to fight. So many devotees are going through that right now. They're selling in for what they think will make them personally happy and comforting, rather than doing the necessary transcendental thing. And by that, then their material life becomes a major priority over their spiritual life. But because they have spiritual credits, it means that they have a chance to settle in and kind of get aligned to a heavenly consciousness rather than a devotional consciousness. This is one of the downsides of all the chaos and confusion that goes on from the secular world and from the devotional environment. So you'll see time and time again that the true devotees never settle for their own just personal happiness. It's like next time, I like to, but I don't like to single you out. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not good. At the same time, sometimes it helps us to get off the conceptual level. So you'll see how Kartamrisha, Sadacharya, they're struggling, but you will notice that they're advancing. Because, they've chose the duty and service and what's necessary over their personal comforts. Ekavir, brotherly, advancing by means of violence. Because they've chose personal service. I mean, you'd be shocked. The day I was having a conversation with a few devotees in Gitanagri, and I was just amazed at some of the realizations that they had. And I didn't want to tell them, but I just realized, because they're making that arrangement because they're trying to set the foundation for some of you, something that's going to need in the future. And any time you do pioneering, Kendra, remember the Ma Mantra? Remember when they were doing pioneering, the amazing realizations and the miracles that happened around it. You're doing pioneering things, like you are opening up or arranging for another chapter of Lord Chaitanya's mission. And so things happen far beyond your normal capacity. But if we're thinking of our personal comfort, then even though we're saying that things will be better, but the opposite. Because it'll be very temporary. It'll never turn out the exact way that you expect. Now that doesn't mean that you should be oblivious to the fact that you're in a mature body and you have mature demands. You have to address those. Mm-hmm. But secondary, primary thing should be the spiritual. Okay, what's your last question,
please? Someone have a note from the back to ask you.
Hello.
How is Parabrahma? Where is Parabrahma? Is he okay? Is he coming back?
I should be asking yourselves. What's your godbrother? So we should find out where he is, what's going on. I'm just coming back from, you know, 2 months of being in different countries, and I should be asking, you know, where is this person, where is that person? You know, should you find out for yourself?
I did have an opportunity to check, and the last I heard, he had gone to California to help during Rapiaja last year, which is around the 4th of July, and did not come back. But that he is okay.
He's the can.
Now
and he was supposed to come back and a couple months ago to the comic, and they didn't hear from him, so it's still asking.
Defecation. Not okay.
Yeah.
Well,
we're right, probably.
Yeah, I could tell. It sounds like he's not dead, or.
Right.
Is he in the temple?
No, I have no idea.
But anyone who has contact should try to help him or anyone else who's going through some conflict, some challenges, some bewilderment. And as you notice that happening with each other, try to help, because if it happens to you, you're going to need help. If you think about I, then even though it's more directed toward one's so-called benefit, transcendental turns the opposite. The more that one is selfless with strategy, the more there will be advancement. The more there is selfishness, the more there will be.
What do you mean with strategy?
It means that we must be practical. If I'm selfish and I say, and I work, I go outside and I don't worry about, you know, putting on sufficient clothes, I'm just going to do this thing and not this body, that's not practical. I have to dress properly so I won't get a cold, so I won't get pneumonia, so I can keep on doing service. If I work in such a way that I'm getting only 3 hours of sleep, after a while my body will get sick, and so that's a renunciation of the mode of ignorance, or the mode of passion. So we do the transcendental thing, but we recognize that we're in physical bodies, so we have to take care of our physical demands. But as we started off and we end with, but not as a number one priority. God is taking care of the birds, huh?
Mm. Release of the fish.
He's taking care of the dogs. We're not even constantly trying to serve him. Then, hey, well, he's going to take care of us in some way. You know, birds got to just get food, even though it's no one's care. Bird has instinct, it goes to another area. You know, species are all designed so they can be able to function above each other. What to say of species where we have the rational intelligence, we can literally try to consciously focus in Krishna's service, and Krishna will give us. So, you know, I give you little examples how we're just putting preaching first, then things just happen, you know, things come together. The devotees in Africa, they so much wanted to preach, and they just recently, they wanted to go to many villages. And so this kind of, out of nowhere, this, the Centennial Office gave them about like $6,000-$7,000. And so they were able to travel so many countries. 15 devotees, they went village to village, you know, on foot. They took a robot and the vans and the cart. They just went village to village. And they had this most amazing experiences. Most of them said it was the top preaching they've ever done. Because they went from one place, people had never seen the devotees in some places. They were like so kind, they would visit the chiefs. Sometimes they go to the village, the chief would just call out, and all the people, thousands of people come, they receive the devotees, you know. They get first, they got coverage on the newspapers, front page newspapers. Sometimes the governor, the mayor of the city would come out. And it's just a matter of just going and preach. And then, you know, so people. I mean, just think now. Only a year and a half ago, we just had some land, and we were trying to do things. And I come back, and I say, now, we have not that we're building five temples, but we have five temples in Nigeria alone. We're building at the same time, and the devotees are now living in the temples. And these devotees have no money. I mean, they're shocked themselves, how it's happening. Some of these temples, there's four or five devotees, and they're building huge buildings. And they're just shocked themselves. This is how it's happening. When you go in a temple, when you see it, it's a very, you know, beautiful facility. It's a temple, and it's an ashram, and we have a library, and a pre-clinic, and so many things. And
It's just two devotees who are doing it. But before they started building the temple, they didn't have enough money to last them 2 days, you know, for the food. They were, you know, the money every day they have to buy, use the money for that day, the next day for food. And none of them even planned for a week. But they're starting. And then somebody comes to visit. One man came from England. He came to visit. And he was like so impressed with the devotees. He later went back to England. He wrote the devotees and said he wanted to get the deities for them. He spent like, I don't know, $10,000 to $15,000. Paper needs in India, and then shipped them. The other man came to see something on the television, and came around, and then he became inspired. He has a big insurance company, and he's helping out. You know, he's a local, he's a Ghanaian. Another person, one devotee, I gave him a book, treated him nice, he came by, gave some asylum, while the devotees were struggling, and he started giving regular donations. Another man and his wife was fighting. One of the mothers, I think, was talking, preaching to them, helping them together, and now he's getting together. It's just, you know, nothing after. Temple in the main temple in Nigeria, in Lagos, Port Harcourt. These are, big city places. You got to be shocked when you go to Africa now, because there used to be so many hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of devotees. Now there is a small number of devotees, amazing projects. Because when you turn the fan on, then where there's sincerity, you get stronger. Those who are not, they fall to the side. But then the strength just goes on and turns one thing after another. It's like a teacher in a big classroom. So you can teach things based on the lowest denominator and keep everybody going real slow, or you can start speeding up, and you may have only a few who can hang in, but then you start moving by leaps and bounds. I mean, you see here, when we moved, and I'll start with this, because, you know, you go back 5 years ago, I said the same thing. Look at when we were on 9th Street. Before we came to 9th Street, and we were on, Ingraham. When we left Ingraham, we did not have a money for covering for the Ingraham rent. And we were talking about getting a bigger building, and we didn't know the next month how we were going to pay the Ingraham rent. We got the 9th Street project. We couldn't even afford that little house that we had. See, you guys were coming to the program, taking asylum, and going back home. You didn't realize that we could not afford our rent. Huh? Isn't that right, Eva? Can't you remember? The 2 months before we moved, we were at a point that we would have to even close down Ingram because we couldn't afford it. But then we're asking about a bigger place. Mosquito saw this 9th Street place, told us about it. We went there, didn't have even enough money for the small place. We saw the guy, and I gave him an offer. He said, no way. And later he called us back, and he agreed. And we couldn't even afford that offer. How are we going to do that? I mean, we offered $1,000 less for the rent than what he wanted, you know. And we couldn't even afford. We couldn't even afford that.
If you made that same offer today, he would say yes because it's been empty.
It's like Krishna arranged it. We're supposed to have that place, and we left. He can't get anybody. And then, you know, Bali decided to try. Because we figured Krishna wants to get arranged. So they made that shift. So if preaching is the first thing, then everything else will happen. Just keep preaching the first thing. We thought about money, we thought, we can't afford this place. How are we going to do this thing? Or we're in the left butternut. How can we afford it? What if you get the money first? If you get the manpower first? No. But the idea is, preaching is the first. So all of you, think bigger about the need of preaching, the need for helping people, the need for helping yourself, tremendous problems that are there. Keep that first, and Krishna will let one thing unfold after another, and you'll just be looking and be shocked and amazed at what happened. Huh? I mean, just look how Krishna influenced Madhvacharya. I mean, this is a normal thing. We're in somebody's house. Huh? Those of you who are new, this is somebody's house that has given us their house, newlyweds, and their first child, two small babies, doctor, a nurse who got tremendous schedules. Can you imagine a doctor, crazy schedule he has, and he got to come home to a public place every day. And in fact, every morning he's up every morning with the RT. Then they go to a public, and they come home to a public place. I mean, that is Krishna's arrangement. We left 9th Street. We couldn't afford this. The guy was going up higher. We sent devotees to Giranagri. How are we going to maintain the place? But then because the preaching is there, then we have this facility. And the next thing that happened on a bigger, much bigger scale, you're going to see as the preaching is there, so you'll see a big unfolding. The bigger desire for preaching happens, you're going to see so many other facilities that are built. As I'm connecting now with these other projects, everywhere I went, there was a very strong connection. I just had a few more leaders doing so many things from global perspective, so one project would help another project. I mean, this Detroit project is so, you visited Detroit, some of you. That's a very powerful project. That project has transformed that entire neighborhood. Millions of dollars have been invested, tens of millions of dollars have been invested in the States based on the fact that temple is there. That temple is one of the most nicest buildings in the whole of Detroit. It's a very famous place. You could have all kinds of things going out from there, reaching people of all calibers, reaching the cultural groups, reaching the New Age groups, reaching the politicians. That's a place that you could easily bring governor, senator there, be very impressed, because it is a powerful place. Now the museum is running. You got this year, none of you have seen yet. Downstairs is a whole other aspect of that mansion. We have a theater, we have a museum, you know, just like Disneyland, we have these live dioramas that move and speak, all, you know, for preaching. And I can't develop that fast enough now because I don't have proper manpower to be able to do it. Newman Dobbin, I haven't had a chance to go to Newman Dobbin for quite a while. Nobody's writing me like anything. And I'm just, you know, asking if they, you know, that when I come back from Suriname, then I'll try to come. 3,000 acres of land. So many facilities there, so many devotees there with so many skills. It's a matter of bringing them together, creating some form of what has to happen. Anyway, there's so many things that already this place here, place there, place there. And other things that even have manifest on the physical yet that are also there. And all you got to do is like what Nandini was saying, that she's listening and noticing that 5 years ago, that what I'm saying now, I said then, just that it'll be a little slow, so a little unfolds, and you just kind of think that it's just happening. But you have to remember that it was even talked about a long time ago. That means it was already ready to happen. There was already some vision or some realization about it, and then we're moving through it. We were in that Burnett project one day, pinching myself by the brothers in the car, going to one of my favorite places, Salvation Army. And I was telling them, I said, so you're going to see every year that things are going to go, remember the conversation? Things are going to go by leaps and bounds. There's a certain point we had to start making some transitions. And here we're just going into the Salvation Army and living in a one-room basement. And I'm talking about things are going to grow by leaps and bounds. And we're just driving in a little car, you know, little clunker. And then we're going into the Salvation Army and trying to worry about saving a few nickels and dimes. You know, but it's just a matter of it's the way the transcendental system works. Anyway, I don't keep it too long. But do keep in mind about speeding up and make it personal. Look at your own life and see where you can improve, and that's going to affect the consciousness of the environment. So when we meet this Saturday, have a chance to have thought a little bit about, you know, this new year coming and how you want to try to situate yourself, improve with your sadhana, and to improve with how you cooperate with what has to be done. And try to enjoy the difficulties that come so that, you know, you move through them faster. Make it a learning experience. I think there's some announcements. Srila Prabhupada ki
jai!
Krishna Prabhupada ki
jai!